This week's parsha is Parshas Bechukosai. And we are continuing on our climb up toward Shavuos, toward the time of Matan Torah, toward times of preparing ourselves to receive the Torah and being a vessel to receive the Torah. With this in mind, I'd like to continue on this quest that we have begun in these last few weeks and try to learn together a medrash which is quoted at the beginning of Parshas Bechukosai. The pasuk begins, "Im bechukosai telechu," if you walk in my ways. On this concept of walking in Hashem's ways, the Medrash brings the following insight. Source 1. If you walk in my statutes, im bechukosai telechu. In connection with this, the verse states, I considered the ways in which I would go, but my feet carried me to your statutes, King David stated. Every day I decided to go to a specific place, to one person's home and another person's house. However, my feet brought me to your synagogues and study halls. This is why it says, my feet carried me to your statutes. The idea here of im bechukotai telechu, the idea of walking in statutes, the Medrash connects to David HaMelech. Where David HaMelech would wake up in the morning and say, I want to go to this place, I want to go to that place. But in the end, he always landed up in the Beis Medrash, he always landed up in the study hall. This Medrash, I think, has a tremendous amount of meaning and direction for our lives. And obviously, like all Medrash, it can be understood on many levels. I'd like to try to take a look at two distinct understandings of what this Medrash is about and what lessons it teaches for our lives. The first will be perhaps the most classic way of understanding the Medrash, and the second, I think, will be a bit of a chiddush, a bit of a novel understanding of what this Medrash is trying to teach us. The classic understanding, and obviously the classic understanding's relevancy and development for our own personal lives, I'd like to begin this aspect of analysis from a very beautiful piece of Rav Halpern's book of Shari Chaim, where he notes in source number 2 that Parsha Bechukosai begins with a list of many blessings that we will benefit from if we keep the Torah. The Torah says, I am Hashem your God who took you out of the land of Egypt, out of being their slaves, ve'eshpor mutot alechem. I broke the pegs, ulechem, of your yoke. Why is the breaking of the yoke mentioned only now into the reference of going out from Egypt? It would seem much more appropriate to mention that Hashem broke the yoke, mutot ulechem, the yoke upon us, in the story itself, in the book of Shemot. So explains Chazal the following, ve'eshpor, as well as referring to the past that Hashem broke our yoke from upon us, it also refers to the time of Mashiach and the Beit HaMikdash. So the obvious question is, if this parsha is about the future, then why do we need the stage of Mutot Lechem? Wasn't that done on Yisrael's going out of Egypt? Why even mention it at all? So in order to appreciate what is this reference of breaking the yoke of both the past and the future, he brings a very interesting insight from the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer quotes the Gemara in the Nedarim, where Reish Lakish says that there's no Gehenim in the world to come, but rather, Hashem will take the sun from its cover, and this is based on a pasuk and the end of Malachi, which is the last of the prophets, and Tzaddikim will be healed by it, and the wicked will be burnt by it. What is the meaning of the sun's burning? So the Ein Yaakov cites the Chidushei HaGaonim, which says that the sun symbolizes the light of the Shekhinah. This spiritual light will be abundant, and tzaddikim will benefit from it. For people who try to toil in Torah and mitzvot, it was perhaps hard for them, but they made a real effort. With this spiritual light, these things will become easier. Tzaddikim will be able to tolerate this light because they were already attuned to it. But the wicked simply will melt away because it will be too much for them. In the future, God will bring out a tremendous spiritual energy, as it were. People who in their lifetime toiled and struggled made an effort to learn Torah, right? To come to a shiur every Sunday morning, to listen to a shiur once a week, whatever it is, they made an effort to make Torah a main part of their lives. So if Torah and mitzvot are a main part of their lives, so when the sun comes out, the spiritual energy, they're going to be warmed by this. They're going to be able to tolerate it. But the wicked, who had no place for the spiritual energy and had no desire for the spiritual energy, are going to be burned by it. They're just going to melt away. And in source number 4a, he quotes a very famous story about the Panovitcher Rebbe, where it was noted that when the Panovitch was being built, they had Russian workers work on the building, who at one point in their lives were yeshiva bachrim in Russia, and who come now to Israel and were in building. And one day the supplies did not come, and they were sitting around doing nothing. So one of the workers turned to the Panovitcher Rebbe and said, I remember learning that if we are employed, and it's not our fault, we're ready to work, that the materials aren't here, you owe us pay for the day. So Panovitcher Rebbe says, you are correct, but I have other work for you to do. You know, if you're ready, you're going to sit around, I have other work. Come into the Beis Medrash, and I'd like you to pair up into chavrusas, and I'll pay you instead to learn today. What happened? They agreed and paired up into chavrusas. After 10 minutes, some got up and went for coffee. I'm on the top of 4B. Half an hour later, a few more joined them. After an hour, the others got fed up. They said to the Rav, we can't do it. It's too boring. You can keep the money. And that's exactly the way the Panovitcher Rebbe explained the story by citing the words of the Rambam, that when Mashiach comes, the only pleasure will be to benefit from the Shechina. It's a spiritual pleasure. Someone who enjoys learning Torah and doing mitzvahs will benefit from this, as he had a connection to the spiritual pleasure beforehand. But someone to whom it is boring will see it and sees life as, you know, another shiur to go to, another mitzvah to do, it's just a burden. He will be like those workers and will be unable to handle it. And this, my friends, explains a very interesting chazal that talk about how on Pesach night, 180,000 soldiers died from Sanherib's army in the times of Chizkiah HaNavi, Chizkiah HaMelech. And the question is, how did these soldiers die? Was there a magefa? Was there a plague? 180,000 soldiers dying in one night? That's a tremendous amount of soldiers. So Chazal explained that the Malachi, because it was Seder night, the angels in heaven started singing Shira, started singing song to of praise to God. And they made their singing audible to this army. And when the soldiers heard such spirituality, they couldn't handle it, and they died. And this is what will happen in the future as well. When you have a tremendous power of spirituality, the question is, are we able to handle this voltage or not? And that explains the original question of the Chasam Sofer of why is the breaking of the yoke found in our parsha. Source 6. We see that there are in fact two breakings of the yoke. One, when the Jews left Egypt, they had a great desire to receive the Torah. As the Sefer Chinuch says, that the mitzvah of counting the Omer is to show our great desire for the day that we receive the Torah. One may have thought that having left Egypt, they would have expected that being subservient to the Torah would be a terrible burden. No, the answer is Hashem broke this yoke from their necks, and with that, the feeling that being a Jew would just hold them back. Hashem helped them out. He broke this yoke. And instead of being a burden, Torah mitzvot, it's a pleasure. It's something enjoyable. And the Chasam Sofer then says that so too in the future. And that's why this pasuk, when it talks about the blessings that the Jewish people receive for learning the Torah, talks about in the past how we got this almost privilege from God that He broke this yoke, that Torah is a pleasurable thing for us, as well as in the future. When the Beit HaMikdash will be built, there will be a similar breaking of the yoke. A person will only enjoy Torah and mitzvot and he will benefit from the divine light of the Shekhinah. On the other hand, a Russia who cannot enjoy these pleasures won't be able to handle them. The experience of leaving Egypt will be a similar experience of the future. There were many Jews, we know, Rabbi Leibel Eger in the Torah Emes explains that there were many Jews, we know Chazal tell us, that died in the plague of darkness. Rabbi Leibel Eger in the Torah Emes asks, why Dafka the plague of darkness? So we know the Malbim, as well as other commentators, know that the plague of darkness was really light. That God brought down the Or HaGadol, the concealed light, and it was so intense that, you know, if you like look into the sun, straight into the sun, you can't handle it. The light of the Or HaGadol was so intense that the Egyptians were blinded by it, but the Jews were able to see by it. And he notes that this Or HaGadol was not just a physical light, it was a spiritual light. And those Jews who didn't yearn for this spiritual light, those Jews who didn't have a desire to be saved, those Jews who didn't have a desire to have a relationship with God, when this spiritual light came down, similar to the singing of the angels on Pesach night, which killed all those 180,000 soldiers of Sanherib, similarly, this spiritual light also killed these Jews who were overwhelmed by the voltage of this experience of God's direct, almost, spirituality that came down into this world. And this is the question that we need to each and every one of us ask ourselves. As we know, we're standing mamish on ikvasa de Mashiach. We're standing at the end times of Mashiach. I'm sure many of us have heard that there's been a lot of talk that Mashiach is really around the corner. You know, you hear quoted Rav Elchanan Wasserman saying that it will be 70 years from the year 1939. You hear other people talking about the Birkas HaChama next year, that it's an exact place that happened only previously, Yitzhak Mitzrayim, in the times of Mordechai and Esther. And I just heard a very interesting mashal quoting the name of Rav Kushelevsky, who says, we know Chazal tell us that we can't figure out the end of time, so how are we now saying it's going to happen here, it's going to happen there, it's like, So he explains, you can't figure it out, it's like a train journey. That when you're at the beginning of the train, you can't ask, when are we getting to our destination? But when we're almost at the destination, it's one or two stops away, then it is appropriate to ask, when is this train going to stop? When are we going to get off? So when we're speaking about that Mashiach is ultimately coming, at any moment, we all feel it, that we're really at the ikvus of the Mashiach. And there's so many things pointing to this, whether it's next year, whether it's next month, whether it's tomorrow or in a few years from now. How does one attune himself to reaching this level of not finding Torah mitzvot a burden? How will it be that we will be able to handle this light of Mashiach? The Maharal explains that people are born with a unique makeup. Well, we know that we're half animal and half spiritual. Therefore, there's a continuous struggle between the body, which wants to follow the physical, and the soul, which wants to follow the spiritual. How does one make one's spiritual side stronger than the physical? The answer is through learning Torah. When a person learns, it has the koach to clean out his nefesh. And that's the idea where I created the Yetzer Hara and I created Torah as its cure. So the idea being is that we need to work on it now, our relationship to Torah. As it's interesting to note in Source 8, we say two blessings in the morning before learning Torah. The first blessing is la'asot divrei Torah, to engage ourselves, to work in Torah. And then the second bracha is v'harevna, it is pleasant. And that is the order. Sometimes it's difficult to go to a shir. It's difficult to do a mitzvah. And that is that we have to work on it. But we have a desire. We want to come close to spirituality. If this is where it's at, although at the beginning it's effort, but once we have our priorities in order, then Zvaharevna, it is pleasant. And he notes in Source 9 that this is what it means that Chazal say that one's Torah has to be fixed and his work should be temporary. This means that even if a person goes out and has a livelihood, their whole focus is really on Torah. He's constantly thinking, when am I going to be able to sit and learn? As well as he's looking to be careful about the halacha, so he's in business. And he's asking himself, am I over on ribbis? Am I over on other, on gezeila, on charging interest? Am I over on stealing? Am I over on lashon hara? If a person's whole mindset is Torah, that's la'asot b'divrei Torah. He's engaged in Torah's whole life. He doesn't miss the fixed times that he set for learning. Such a person is one who has a fixed set itinerary for Torah. Such a person is the person who will feel that spiritual light in the future. And indeed, Rav Moshe, on his first piece in this parsha, in source number 11, points out. That's the idea of im bechukosai teilechu. That Rashi, Chazal tell us, shitiyu ameilim b'Torah. You have to work hard at Torah. How is it that Torah is going to be for us pleasant? How is it that Torah and mitzvot are going to be, in the future, a spiritual light that's going to be a healing aspect for us? It means investing now. Amelus, says Ramoshe, working hard in Torah and mitzvot means I see clearly what my priority is, and I show my priority to others. What a person invests in, what a person sweats over, what a person invests their time and energy into, that is clearly what a person finds pleasure in. Like we know, some people will spend hours and hours upon hours decorating their house, which is beautiful and wonderful. But it shows that their house is very important to them. It's very special for them. Likewise, a person needs to put in hours into a mitzvah. If you're into Hachnasat Orchim, you're into the Chesed community in the shul, whatever it is. When I have a melus, when I put in effort, when I sweat over something, when I'm up all night making phone calls and working on this committee and that committee, that shows my priority. That shows my spiritual intention. And that, my friends, is what we need to be focusing in on as we are coming closer to the Sphira. We've now entered the fifth week of Sphira. We're entering almost the end part of Sphira, the week of Ho, the week of Aaron HaKohen. It's the week of Avoda. It's a week of service. It's a week that we need to begin really focusing on asking ourselves what are our priorities and be able to give ourselves completely over to those priorities that the la'asok b'Torah, that my entire day, whether I'm working in Torah directly or not, my focus is on Torah, my focus is on mitzvot. How are we to accomplish this? How are we to be successful in this? So obviously, it's as the Lekach Valibuv notes in source number 10, where the Gemara Nedarim darshan out the lo halchuba, that they didn't walk in my ways of Torah. And that's why the Churban Bayis, the first destruction of the temple happened, which according to most of Farshim is the close, the curses in our parsha. So Gemara Nedarim says, shelo berchu b'Torah tchila. They didn't say a birkas haTorah before they learned. What's the connection between the two? But rather, v'lo hachuba means is that they didn't feel their chayos from learning Torah. It was that they went through their day, but where they got their chayos from, where they got their energy from, was not from the way of Torah. And therefore, they didn't make a bracha over it. It wasn't for them the most important thing. And this is the challenge that we need to have. We need to feel that we're always holech beruchnius, that we're always growing in our spiritual endeavors, and that our focus in life is a focus of Torah, of saying a blessing beforehand, connecting that learning to its source, to our Avodas Hashem. So again, my friends, if we're missing that aspect, if they're not saying the bracha of the Torah because they don't feel their chayus, their life force is from Torah, they don't feel kaim chayenu v'aruch yameinu, this is our life. So the question we have to ask ourselves, and this is the question we discussed last week as well, of Rachmana Liba Bayi, Hashem desires our heart. How do we reach this level that it becomes something for us that is alive, vibrant, that this is really the focus of our lives? So obviously, my friends, there are no simple answers to these questions. But one approach that I'd like to take, and it seems almost a simplistic approach, but I think nevertheless a very basic one, is to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's to feel Hashem's presence in our lives. If we're able to feel Hashem's presence in our lives, so it changes the dynamics of that which we do. How do we get to this Emunah Chushi, the Yalkut Lekach Tov asks, source 12? So one approach is kol davar shincha zakuklo bakesha toma HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One of the ways to make Hashem's presence very real in our lives is to turn to Hashem for whatever we need. If we need new shoes, we go to the corner, to the room, and we say, Hashem, Re'ena, please look at my shoes, how torn they are, and please help me find money to buy new shoes. And that says the Chazon Ish in source 13 is based on the concept of Ezi Parsha Ketana Shekol Gufei Torah Tluyam Da. What is a small puzzle that the entire Torah is based on? It's Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu Vehu Yasher Chosecha. That in all your ways get to know Him, and God is going to straighten your path. Whatever you need, you shouldn't allow the Yetzer Hara to say, ah, it's tiny, it's a pair of shoes, it's those keys that I keep on losing. No, nothing is small. Whatever you need, connect to Hashem. And when you connect to Hashem in whatever you need, you're making Hashem much more of a powerful reality in our lives. The truth be told is, and this is what Rafikus discusses with Noel Miriam in Source 17, he says, the problem is when we teach our children, and the way we've been raised about davening is in a way that is very much aidei nishmak through discipline, right? Srichim litpalel, you have to daven. And when we educate in this way of you have to daven, so then we're missing the key of davening. And what happens, as Rav Pinkus notes in Source 18, is we don't get up in the morning and say, Boker Tov Hashem, good morning. It's so nice to be able to have another day to spend with you, and another day to do Torah mitzvot, and to be able to communicate with Hashem and really feel this connection. But rather what happens, we are teaching our children, and this is a major theme in Rav Pinkus' Sefer of Ol Miriam, to be an automated society, right? We're very careful about Kriyat Shema. Zman Kriyat Shema and Zman Tefillah, and again, don't get anyone wrong here. Zmanim are very important. When to stand up, when to sit down, when to cover your eyes. All of this is important. But he says, the problem is, we teach them everything. Aval, davar echad einenu melamdim otam. There's one thing we don't teach them. L'daver, Hashem Yisbarach. We forgot to teach them that we're talking to Hashem and davening. Anachtu pashut mechanchim b'li Hashem Yisbarach. We are educating without God. And he says this is the phenomena in 19, why you have at times so many people that lo aleinu go off the derech. Why? Because they're taught in a very disciplined way, but the passion, the feeling, the connection that Hashem is in my life, that Hashem has a relationship with me, that wasn't taught. Lo lindu oto v'lo chinchu oto. They never taught him that he's standing in front of Hashem at all times. And as the Griz points out, that's why we have such a challenge of Yiras Shamayim in our generation. We've taken out of Judaism, we are a gufkar, a cold body. We've taken out the tochen, the chaser, the chayus. We're missing the life force of relationship. And he says it's, you know, very much, God forbid, this equation, but it's very much like any machine, right? You have an iPod or a radio, and you turn it off, and it's off. So likewise with God, you know, I turn him off, I tune him in, I tune him out, and when he's there, he's there. When he's not there, I've tuned him out, and he's not there. No. Hinei lo yonav lo yishad shomer Yisrael. God never disappears. He's there at all times. And he's there not only in Be'adam Chaveiro between man. I mean, Ben Adam L'Makom, between man and God, he's very much there as well, Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, between man and one's fellow man, it's not just, you know, I have to do this and I can't do that. And I understand that logically I should be nice to my friend. I understand logically I shouldn't hurt my friend. I understand logically I shouldn't steal. No, it's much more than that. When I am mekayim these mitzvot, I am creating godliness. I am creating Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence in this world. As he says so beautifully, when a husband and wife say good morning to each other in a beautiful way, it's as if, and they smile at each other, it's as if Hashem leaves everything in that moment. And it's b'sharit shchinato ben b'nei ezug, and God rests his shchina, his divine presence, among that couple. And likewise, when they're not so nice to each other, it's like the Churban Beis HaMikdash, like the destruction of the temple. Because God is found everywhere, and we have to feel His presence in our lives. I'd like to share with you a story in a book that I just picked up today. I almost feel lahavdil, like starting with this medrash we began with today, that David HaMelech saying, wherever I go, I want to go to this place, I want to go to that place, I land up in the base medrash. So I have a little bit of a different issue, that wherever I go shopping, I somehow land up in a bookstore. So it's a problem when the pharmacy is next door to a bookstore and you're just going in for a shekel and a half item and you land up in the bookstore. But Baruch Hashem, we try, because libraries are very limited and the types of books are limited in Ramat Beit Shemesh. So we try, in honor of memory of my mother, Allah Shalom, that we started a gemach, a lending library in our own home, as well as in our children's schools, to be able to allow, you know, children to read. So I always have this idea to see what's the latest and greatest that we could add to these libraries. So I came up today with, instead of for the children, we also lend out books for adults, a book for adults, which I'm a very big fan of Rabbi Spiro, Touched by a Story. This is his new book, A Touch of Warmth, that I just came mamish across today. So I'd like to share a number of stories from this sefer, A Touch of Warmth. I didn't get much else done today except reading, which I guess is something. I'm very taken by his stories. I think everyone learns a tremendous amount. What does it mean to feel Hashem's presence? So he tells a story called No Jew Will Be Left Behind, about a certain young man named Moshe who was living in Brownsville, New York, who grew up in the yeshiva system and had a lot of questions, and his questions were not addressed. And he eventually decided that he had enough of the yeshiva system, and he went into business, and slowly but surely he left the path, which was very, very painful for his family. And he felt bad because he was very close to his father, but nevertheless he felt that Judaism was not for him. And he went so off the derech that the only time that he went to shul was Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, depending on the given year, and his father's birth site, because he felt very close to his father. Many, many, many years later, his father already had died, and at the shiva, his friends from yeshiva came to him and implored him in his memory of his father, if he wants to learn, here are their numbers, and they'll be ready to learn with him. And many of his chaverim from yeshiva, many of his friends from yeshiva went on to become great rabbis. But he was, you know, impervious to all of their pleas and said, no, I've chosen my lifestyle, and I'm very happy with where I'm at. So now we're talking about many, many years down the road. And Moshe, who's now Mark, realizes that he's going to be on a business trip in like a far-flung place, and it's going to be the same time as father's yurt site. So he asks one of the people at work if he could locate a shul that he could daven at. So he gets to the city, and he enters into this shul, and it was a shul that you could see was vibrant at one time, and now had this old rabbi, and barely a minion, and everything around the shul looked tattered and old. And, you know, like Mark is like musing to himself, like, this is religion, it just gets old, you know. And the rabbi welcomes him in, and the rabbi was in the middle of a chumash rushing, he says, please sit down. And the rabbi was teaching the story of Yosef, when Yosef was kidnapped by the brothers. And the pasuk says, Vayakumu kol banav v'chol benatav l'nachamo, and all of his sons and daughters got up to try to comfort Yaakov. And he refused to be comforted. So he quotes, the rabbi quoted the Rechaim HaKadosh. It doesn't say with what they comforted him. So it says, they got up and comforted him. They all got up, all the children and all the grandchildren, and they stood up, and they said to Yaakov Avinu, look what a beautiful family you have. Look what a rich family of you know, children and grandchildren. That should be your nechama. That should be your consolation, that you have a beautiful family. It's a terrible thing to lose a child, I understand, but you still have a beautiful family. But he refused to be comforted because Yaakov Avinu was trying to tell them, it doesn't matter how many children one has, each one is precious. Now, the rabbi then went on, and he says, the same is true with the Almighty and his children. Some might suggest or feel that the Almighty is satisfying seeing so many wonderful Torah Jews, but they don't realize how great his pain is when he loses even one. We're not speaking about those who pass on to the next world, but even about those who are lost in this one and don't feel like they have a place among his people. For this too, the Almighty is inconsolable. And he listened. Mark listened very well and began to cry. Hearing this on his father's yurt site, he couldn't but wonder his own pain that he caused his own father. And he also realized that not only had he caused pain to his own father, he realized how much pain he caused to the father of all mankind, to the father in heaven. And he wanted to console this father with a capital F. And therefore, after this business trip, he came home and he got out those numbers of his chaverim, of his friends from yeshiva, and he began to study and he began to learn and he began to put on tefillin and he began to daven three times a day. And at this point, my friends, Mark, a.k.a. Moshe, is now 70 years old and a full Baal Tshuva. My friends, this is the message that we need to give over. The message of HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about each and every one of us. Hashem wants a relationship with us. And that it matters every single human being that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates. And that's why we need to understand that when a person davens, do you know what happens when a person davens? So he notes Rav Pinkus in 21. When we say Tehillim, there's a concept that David HaMelech is saying Tehillim with us. It's not just a dry, mechanical act. It's alive. It's vibrant. David HaMelech himself, V'chvodo Ba'atzmo, is saying Tehillim. And you know what happens when a person davens? When a person davens, we know that there's a concept of Vaviosi Melhar Kochi, the simachtim beveit filati, that God rejoices in his house of prayer. Because God himself davens, and he davens that I should go lifnim mishurat hadin, above and beyond the letter of the law. And says Rav Pinkus, kivyochol kadosh baruch hu shemelokol aretz kvodo, Hashem, who is as if fills the entire world, mamshich matzmo kol hashefa v'chesa v'chol brachol l'netzach nitzachim, aydei otapu la'ani kreita kadosh baruch hu mitpalel. That God is creating a shefa bracha. Every time God davens, he's creating blessing and peace throughout the world. And when does Hashem daven? Kol pam sheyudim mitpalel, every time we daven. At that moment, and to that extent, and with that kavana, Hashem davens as well. My friends, this is a soul. It's not about mechanically taking three steps forward, three steps backward, bowing, when, how, who, where. It's about the soul of Judaism. It's about relationship with Hashem. It's about davening to Hashem all day when we need help. It's about the times of davening to feel that it makes a difference to Hashem. It's a relationship with Hashem. To bring Hashem back into the equation. To talk about Hashem in our homes. To be able to teach our children what it means to have a relationship. Alive and dynamic, that you can never tune Hashem out. And this, my friends, is a deeper understanding, says Rav Pinkus, of what the experience of Mamet Har Sinai was about. We know there are two stages of marriage. There's a stage called Kiddushin, and then there's a stage called Nisuin. Kiddushin means that you are betrothed. It means that you take on the obligations of being a Jew. But Nisuin is much more than that. Nisuin means you're living with the person. It's a 24/7 relationship. When the Jewish people said, Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do and we will listen, they were ready to take on the Kiddushin. We're ready to take on the do's and the don'ts of the relationship. We're allowed to do this, we're not allowed to do that. Hashem says, no, I want more. I want Nisuin. I want 100%. I want you to move out of your father's home and move into my home. And that, Kadosh Baruch Hu had to be kofal leim har kigigit. Hashem had a force over their head. Because that entails a tremendous amount of responsibility. That entails a tremendous amount of energy. And that entails a tremendous amount of transformation in our lives. And for that, the Jewish people were hesitant. And that's our challenge until today. And that's how we stay up all night Shavuos. Because we're saying to Hashem, there's nothing greater than we want and to spend our time with you, Hashem. That's what it's about. Judaism, Rachmana, Liba, Bai, as we spoke about last week, is not just about the do's and the don'ts. It's about relationship. It's about passion. It's about desire. And that is the depth of what the Rambam says, that you're not allowed to sell a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because Eretz Yisrael is the Cheder Yichud. It's a place of closeness, of relationship, of intimacy between us and Hashem. And with that, nobody else is allowed to interfere. And that is why the Pasuk tells us in this week's Parsha that when the Jewish people are worthy, even the other nations will not pass through our land to get from one point to the other. It's going to be a land that's just going to be the place where we feel this connection between Hashem and the Jewish people. Our challenge in our lives is to recognize that Judaism is not just a religion, it's a way of life. It's whatever I'm doing the dishes, I'm diapering a baby, I'm getting on the train to work, whatever you do, I mean, be creative. I feel that my life's goal and mission is to connect to God. And this is what I'm doing in order to create a proper home for God to reside. This is what I'm doing in order to make a livelihood that I can support a home of Torah. This is what I'm doing, and I'm very careful about what I'm doing, that I'm careful about the mitzvot. The perspective and the maintaining the perspective is relationship with God. And that 28 is what this medrash means. David HaMelech said, I considered my ways and returned my feet to your testimonies. Chazal said that every day David thought to go about his business, to this place or that, but in the end his feet would take him to the base medrash instead. He did the things he needed to, but he saw those pastimes as temporary. His focus, the mainstay of his day, was always his learning. If one looks at Torah this way, then he's letting his spiritual side prevail over his physical and will be able to experience the divine light in the future. And this is the meaning of this medrash, that David HaMelech went many places, but wherever he went, his focus was shifty b'beit Hashem kol yimei chayai, residing in the house of God. And that is our goal as we are nearing toward Shavuot. Do we have an understanding that when we are preparing ourselves to once again go through this experience of closeness to Hashem on Shavuot, of this marriage with Hashem, do we understand it's not just about, okay, Hashem, I'm ready to keep Torah. It's much deeper than that. It's about, Hashem, I'm ready to have a relationship with you. When I talk to you in davening, I feel like I'm talking to you. And I realize, Hashem, that you care about me as an individual. You're invested in me. And I am careful in all that I do to connect with you. To share another very beautiful story, the second or third story in this book, A Touch of Warmth by Rabbi Spiro. Very, very powerful story of the community of Tells that was invaded by the Nazis. And as in many towns, Lo Aleinu, the Germans from Achshimam would first take the men out and kill them, and then a short time later, the women and children. And that's what happened in the city of Tells, where Rav Bloch, the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Talmidim were all murdered by the Nazis. And the women and children knew it was going to be a short time later that this was going to happen to them. They would have the same fate. And sure enough, the Nazis came to round up the women and the children. Rav Bloch had a 5-year-old nephew. His name was Moshe. Moshe, you can imagine this sight, this little 5-year-old boy, this innocent little boy, is holding on to his mother's hand as they're walking, being gathered into the town square by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam. And suddenly, Moshe darts away from his mother and runs into an empty base medrash, an empty study hall that had been deserted now since all the men were killed. And Moshe scrambles around and grabs whatever he can find, a chumash, a sitter, a tefillin, whatever he can grab, and he stacks them up on a big pile. And you can almost imagine this sight of this 5-year-old boy very, very carefully running out back to his mother to join his mother with this sight, with all these, you know, books and tefillin. And the Nazis find this highly amusing. Like, where is this little kid going to take? And what is he planning on doing with all of this stuff? So someone asked this little boy, Moshe, what are you doing with this? And Moshe said to them the following, and it's very, very, very beautiful. I'd like to read it to you. He says, I am just a little boy. What mitzvos do I have? I don't know how to learn chumash. I barely know how to read from a sitter. and I never had a chance to wear tefillin. So I just want to take all these mitzvos up to Shamayim, up to heaven with me. My friends, this is the power of a 5-year-old little boy, and that's the mindset we need to have. I never learned Chumash. I barely read from the Siddur. I never had the opportunity of putting on tefillin. But all I desperately want is to take this whole stack of mitzvos with me. Ki heim chayenu v'aruch yameinu. This is our lives. This is our focus. This is our mindset. If that's the first understanding of the Medrash, that wherever David HaMelech went, his focus was the will of God. The second understanding of the Medrash is slightly different. We know the days between, this is Rabbi Miller's Shabbat Shirim, third volume, the Shabbat Shir. We know that the time between Pesach and Shavuos, Rabbi Akiva's students died of a plague. Shalomnagu kavod zeloseh. They did not accord sufficient honor and respect to each other. What does this mean? So he notes that we know that every single person in 29 has a different countenance and everyone's temperament and character differs. And every individual has a combination of qualities which cannot be found in any other person alive. Each person shines in a different area, achieving excellence in a field exclusive to him. But there's a potential pitfall in this development. One who has developed a trait to a high degree is extremely sensitive in this area and will be unable to tolerate presence of the opposite trait in one's fellow. A person who excels in his generosity will become vexed when witnessing another person's miserliness. This dissonance precludes a relationship of mutual respect and honor, because one who is very particular to tell the absolute truth is unable to countenance those who are prone to exaggeration and hyperbole. So how can we give one's fellow the honor due to him when obviously the focusing and developing on who we are is just creating more of a disparity rather than bridging the gap? And this is furthered by what Rabbeinu Yonah tells us in Pirkei Avos, where he says that every Jew needs to excel in one trait, where we need to laud this achievement as greater than the attainment of mediocrity in all areas. Instead of being, so to speak, sort of good in many areas, we should really focus our attention, because we have limited energy and resources, says Rabbeinu Yonah, on one area where we can excel. But again, this would, we think, would create even a greater schism. So we know, what is Sphira about? Sphira, Sapir, purity, it's about the cathartic process we go through every year of making ourselves during these 49 days as best as we can. We need to achieve excellence. And as the Sfarim point out, one should never say, well, so much time has passed, what do you want from me? Start today. See what area you excel in. Is it empathy? Is it caring? Is it chesed? Is it achnasat orchim? Is it bikur cholim? Whatever it is, whatever aspect that you realize that people said about you, wow, take that and develop it and work on it and spend time on it and make it yours. Make it something that is something you can acquire, something you can own. And in fact, this is the mindset, as the Ali Shore points out in 31, when the Gemara speaks about Lefichach Nivra Adam Yechiti, that we realize that a person is created alone, and a person should say, Bishvili Nivra Olam, the world was created for me. That every person should look at themselves as the focus of this world, that God created the world just for each and every one of us, because each and every one of us is an individual that cannot be replicated in any other person. And we need to recognize this aspect within us. And says Rav Finkus, he says, what does it mean to be an individual? It means that Hayofi Shel Adam in 36, Mitgale B'yoto Yechidi, the beauty of a person is found when he is singular, when he is alone between him and himself. There you find the Yofi, the Kedusha, the Ashras Hashchina. It's the ability to be able to build your world from yourself without needing the people around you. And this is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in source 33 through 35 speaks about, that a mark of a great person is a person who can keep a secret. And that's why, where was David HaMelech found in stone from Lot with this incestuous relationship with his daughters? What was the positive thing that Lot had? He was able to keep a secret in Mitzrayim and not tell Paro that Avraham had several brother and sister. Says Rashbi, if a person, based on Pasuk and Mishlei, if a person is unable to keep a secret, it means that they don't have the equilibrium emotionally within themselves to be comfortable with themselves to hold something in. That they always have to give it over and tell everybody and need that security from others. Do you know what I heard? Let me share with you. A person who can hold a secret is a person who's an individual who's able to be comfortable with oneself. And this is how Rav Wolbe speaks about the Mishnah we read in last week's Pirkei Avos. Haneor Balayla, one who's up at night, Vamahalach Baderech Yechidi, and one who's walking alone, Umefane Libo Levatela, and turns his heart to nothingness, is Mechayev Venasho. He's deserving of death. Why? Because this is the time of growth. This is a time of thinking. To be able to be alone in the quiet and solitude of the night and you're not able to use it, there's something wrong inherently within yourself. That this is an Eirat Tzon. It's a time of favor. Utilize it that you can build yourself. And Rav Wolbe, this is very famous that it's known about him, was not into dormitory life. He says if boys are in dormitories for far too long, they lose their individuality. They become like tailor-made by the yeshiva. This is the way you need to be. And you have to be careful that every boy is a yachid. Every boy is an individual. And that individual attention which parents give where the child's able to excel in what makes them is often lost in a dormitory. Sometimes you can't help it. But be aware of the challenge of a dormitory situation. So if we're speaking about the importance of developing ourselves, the importance of being comfortable with ourselves, the importance of the uniqueness of self, the importance of making one trait that we are unique, that we are special in this world. And it's not, my friends, talking about what profession you're in. We're talking about who you are as a person. Don't hide behind your profession. Be the best doctor, lawyer, or candlestick maker. No. What is your tuna? What's your chesed? What's your mitzvah? What's your place in this world that makes you unique and special? It could be related to your profession, but what character trait do you have? That's what we need to focus in on. Don't get lost by the outside world viewing you. How do you view yourself? So again, the question is, how, when such a focus, a serious omer is developing oneself, how can we accord honor to others? And the answer, my friends, in source 40, it's a change of perspective. It's a cure for the potential malady. If one excels in a specific area, it must be that one's fellow excels in a different field. One must simply look for the other's areas of greatness and focus upon the outstanding quality which one personally does not possess. One transfers one's concentration from viewing other people in light of one's own character traits to a perspective in which one sees other people in the context of their own expertise. One can then honor one's fellow for the perfection he has achieved. The problem, and this is the problem that again the Ali Shur speaks about, is that we're egotistical. And I view everyone in relation to me. Well, how do they relate compared to me? And then we have the problem, Shalom Nagu Kabotels, that they don't have honor for each other. But if instead I don't look at it as how do they fit in vis-a-vis me? But I realize that I excel in the attribute of truth. I excel in the attribute of chesed. I excel in the attribute of empathy, whatever it is. And I'm able then to step outside myself and see what they are special in. I then am able to move outside myself to the other. And this is the idea that Rabbi Miller speaks about when the Medrash is talking about Mamad Har Sinai. How did the voice 41 emanate from Mount Sinai when the Torah was given? Everyone experienced it according to his capacity. The elders on their level, the young on their level, Moshe Rabbeinu on their level. And the Medrash goes on, Rav Yochanan said that the voice was in fact one voice. However, it split into seven voices, which then became 70 languages. What does this mean? Seven, which split in, became 70, one voice. So he says 42. Seven is the largest prime number under 10, the largest number which still manifests as an entity in its own right. That is, seven is the biggest number without factors. It cannot be formed by multiplying two other numbers. Seven, therefore, indicates individuality. That, which is not grouped together. The voice will split into 70 parts. 7 multiplied by 10. 7, the number of individuality, was multiplied by 10, the number of collectivity. The number 10 indicates the affiliation of individuals to form a single entity. The whole has a value many times greater than the sum of its parts, and hence the concept of a minion. Our character development must follow the path of 70. The 7 must fuse with the 10. Not only must we exert ourselves in the development of our own person, we must recognize the qualities of others. Relating to the traits of other people connects with the community as a whole. We must seek out, pay homage to, the traits of our fellow. And that's how we build a community of solidarity. And that's how we then are able to have the 7 combined into 70. At Mount Sinai, 70 voices were heard. Every voice was different, yet they are classified as one group. Perfection of one's own individuality is achieved only when one seeks the perfection of others. And my friends, this is our challenge. And the Ali Shur speaks about this as well. It's that all of us have to not only excel as an individual and recognize that we are not cookie-cutter generation, but the second step is when we recognize our uniqueness, we must become an Ish HaKlal. We must become a person who's part of a community. See ourselves as a small leaf on a large tree. Get a perspective. And it means, obviously, the ultimate is to be involved in the tzibur, is to be able to care for the community and do for the community and find what your niche is in the community. You know, I had a woman recently call me up and said she comes from a very Kiruv-oriented home where they always had people in their house. And that's what she was used to. But she married somebody who's not Kiruv-oriented. And she lives in Ramat Beit Shemesh, and my friends in Ramat Beit Shemesh is not the bastion of Kiruv here. It's a very, very homogeneous community. And she says, I feel frustrated. I feel like I'm not doing my life's mission. I feel like I'm just taking care of my kids. I go to work. But where am I in terms of bringing other people into my home? Where's my community affiliation? And I said to her, instead of being fixated on your husband's not into speaking to people who are not yet religious, and you can't find these people in Ramat Beit Shemesh, I said, look in your shul. See what committee is needed. The welcoming committee of the new Nefesh B'Nefesh Olim coming every summer. The people who have babies, Kananara, and make meals for them. The Lava Malkos, whatever it is. Get involved in the community. Be somebody who's going to help the community. That is the goal that we need to achieve. Be able to think a little bit outside the box. And says Rav Wolbe, if you're not there just yet, you have to be somebody who's going to be no say ba'ol with the tzibur. Feel the pain of the tzibur. Daven, when we daven, even a personal tefillah, the only way a personal tefillah is answered is not b'lashon yochi, b'lashon rabbi. You're davening for a shidduch, daven for all people to get a shidduch. You're davening for children, everyone should have children, everyone should have refuah. That you feel the pain of the community as your own pain. We don't only live and thrive as individuals. We recognize that our individuality needs to be fused with the community. We need to become part of the community. And as Rabbi Tatz points out in 46, there's a very interesting dynamics that go on. When a person is able to be the best that they can be, it's exactly when we achieve our uniqueness, precisely when we fit into a large 46, larger order perfectly. Remarkably, it's exactly we blend into the universal picture, exactly as we should in terms of our private, unique qualities and abilities, that we thrill to realization that no one else could fulfill this particular function. No one else could stand exactly here and do what must be done here. I fit in perfectly, so I become indistinguishable as an individual. Yet in so doing, my individuality swells to proportions of the universe. When I do what I need to do that nobody else can do, then I am the best I can be. But when really am I able to achieve this? When I put myself into the community. Anochi afar va'efer, I'm a nothing. I'm part of a larger community. But bishvili nivra olam, the world is created for me. Because without my little part in the machine's not going to function. The puzzle piece is going to be missing a piece. That's the dynamics. I have to be the best I can be and then take that best and join the community. And that is what the Medrash means in 48. where King David sought initially to actualize his own individual potential. He attempted to go to specific and individual places, where David HaMelech desired to attain even greater heights in his own divine service and personal spirituality. But the time came when he was directed to the places where the community gathers. His feet led him to the synagogues, the place where people gather together and seek direction in their capacity as a community. King David was duty-bound to guide the assembly of people in place of his yearning to continue in his quest for personal perfection. He was bound to merge the 7 with the 10, thus producing 70, a level of perfection that would otherwise not be achieved. And that is our struggle. The pathway begins as a personal one. The month of Iyar, the zodiac sign of the Shemi Shmuel, says it's a bull, which is a singular animal. We work hard on individuality. But then we move into the month of Sivan, which is twins, where we're able to merge together as a community. And my friends, that is the focus of Sefiras HaOmer, where I work on the 7. I work on the 7 weeks. I work on the individual. But ultimately, I merge into the 70. Ultimately, I merge into the community. And I recognize that I can then stand at Mamet Har Sinai, at the foot of Mount Sinai, collectively, Ki'ish Echad B'Lev Echad, to receive the Torah. It's not about me receiving it individually. It's the one voice turning into 70. I receive it as a community. And therefore, I think the Medrash of David HaMelech going to many places and always landing in the synagogue has two very distinct lessons for our lives. Lesson number one, our entire focus on life is to make Torah our main perspective. That little boy carrying the tefillin, the siddur, and the chumash, there's nothing else but to bring these mitzvot to Hashem. The feeling, even at age of 70, that God looks at me as an only child, as a beloved child, to feel this connection to God. And then the son, when the Mashiach comes, will come out and will be a son of healing and not, God forbid, a son of burning. On the second level, David HaMelech wanted to excel as an individual, and we need to excel as an individual. But wherever he went, he landed up in the synagogues. He recognized that his place in life was to be with the community, was to guide the community. And our challenge with Sefiras HaOmer and to rectify the sins of a Kiva student is to realize we are great and then to appreciate in others what their greatness is. And then to see everybody as a composite whole. And when I'm able to recognize my greatness of 7 and the community greatness of 10, we merge together to the voice of 70, which is one voice that turns into 70. And that is the ultimate goal of Mamet Har Sinai, that we able, as Shavuos nears closer and closer, that we're able to feel that closeness to God, the nisuin, the marriage, in all aspects of my life, God is found whatever I do, as well as the understanding that I stand not only as an individual, but as a part of the collective whole, the leaf on the tree, and my obligation and relationship with God.